Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
You're going to do it?
No, yeah, oh. I was going to do the
intro.
Well,
I was going to do the intro.
Well, I thought that I was going to do the intro.
Are you mad at me right now?
I might be.
How about if I delegate
the intro to you?
Do you hate your husband after kids? We'll find out in today's episode of Baby Steps. I almost called it the tripod. I'm so sorry. You're better intros than me. Why don't you hit him with the intro?
I think you just did it.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
We had a very special, very exciting episode for you all here on Baby Steps, the weekly parenting comedy podcast. We're talking with Jancy Dunn, the author of How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids.
My dog-eared copy.
Oh, I could cry.
Welcome, Jancy.
This is actually my second copy because I gave away my first one to my best friend.
You dear viewers, that argument in the beginning of the show was simulated. No actual husbands were harmed in the filming of that argument. It was a bit. It was staged. That said, we do have fights, and we do fight fair, I think. But, you know, there's a lot to learn, whatever your relationship is. And we're excited to learn from Jancy today. How are you, Jancy?
I'm doing all right. I'm so happy to be here. And I have, is it okay if I lead off with a question? Because I want to know if, remember, Ariel, your four-part plan to be kind of more, to be happier. And one thing was to ask for help. Are you still asking for help? I just have to know just as.
Yeah. I feel like Ned and I, you know, asking for help, that's a big one. And kind of delegating the things that like, I feel like I need help with. And one of those things is definitely the dishwasher. And Ned has taken on the, like, emptying the dishwasher like a hero.
That's hot.
He enjoys it now. I don't know where this joy comes from.
I always enjoyed it. I just didn't realize that you didn't enjoy it, that you specifically needed help. So I'm happy to do it.
Ned, you enjoy it? Is it like a meditative thing? Or like, what? Is it just like,
it pleases my sense of organization and categorization. I know where everything goes. Everything has a spot. It's all nice and clean, and then it goes in its spot.
And who did all that organization?
Oh, you did. You did such a great job with it.
Thank you. And you're very good at things too.
Thank you. I am very good at things. It's true. It's true. Thank you. Always nice to meet a fan, Ariel. Always nice to meet a fan. Like and subscribe for more Ned your household. So what are the other steps of the four-part plan?
Personal time. So a little, Ariel, you were exercising in the morning, I believe.
Yep, exercising in the morning. Right? I did do that for
how's that going?
A week.
Oh, no.
But I plan on doing it more.
Yeah.
I have high hopes.
Yeah, neither of us are too strong in the morning exercise game, but we have plans for it, which it's like the fact that we've made plans makes us feel better about not doing it.
Right.
But that's exciting too. It's like a luxury. You're like, I'm not going to get to it today. Right. How about another was eating better, because a lot of moms just eat like spare French fries or whatever and they don't eat properly.
That's very
true. So I think that was another one, wasn't it?
And sleeping. Sleeping better.
And sleeping. Okay, how's that going, the sleeping?
It's going okay, actually. We're doing this thing where I'll take Finn at night. So like however many times he wakes up, I'll, you know, get up with him and we'll feed and we'll, you know, kind of, hang out in like a dimly lit room. And then when it comes to like 5:30, when it seems like he might be up for the day, then I'm sort of like, hey, Ned,
I'll take him at the crack of dawn, bright and early.
Yes, exactly.
Bright and spicy. And then Ariel gets to sleep in.
For like an hour until Wes comes in and is like, it's light outside. And I'm like, yeah, it is, buddy. Great.
And we gave Ariel a spa day.
I had a spa day. Yeah. Can you believe?
Whoa.
I know.
Wait, was there an occasion or was it a random spa day?
No, it was sort of Ariel was feeling burnt out. And we were like, well, what if you just go? You always, people dream about going to a hotel and just doing nothing, reading magazines.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
Although I could not find anything that was open. So I ended up going to a Marriott hotel that is about 10 minutes away from our house.
Not a sponsor, but a great brand. Hit us up, Marriott.
I sat by their empty pool that, you know, hadn't been cleaned or heated for probably...
Don't listen to that part, Marriott. Or do listen and
clean and heat your pool. And so I just sat by the pool until the sun went down and it got too cold to sit there anymore. And I read a magazine and then I went and I got dinner. And then the next day I went and I got a massage. It was really, really nice.
Wait, you got a massage at the Marriott or somewhere else?
I slept at the Marriott.
Oh, you slept alone at the Marriott?
I slept alone at the Marriott. Yeah.
Until, how late did you sleep?
I slept until 8 a.m.
8 a.m. Can you believe? Can you imagine?
Wow.
All of our 17-year-old listeners are like, I don't know what's going on.
What's wrong?
Sleep until 9 regularly.
Why are parents so obsessed talking about, sleep all the time? That's the first thing we say to each other in the morning. Is it yours? Like, how much sleep did you get? That's all Tom, my husband, and I talk about.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's a lovely gift.
Yeah, it was a lovely gift.
Were you able to sleep without anyone around? Were you just like, night?
Oh, yeah.
Or
yeah.
I told her
a problem at all.
I told her to turn off her phone and don't bother texting me.
And I didn't. I did not
text. Like, I'll be fine. We had a boys' night, me and the boys. Just me and the boys. We made some hamburgers. Yeah, we filmed some TikToks. We were talking.
You should have seen Ariel's happy face when she talked about sitting by an unclean pool.
It was glorious.
Like, you were glowing.
Yeah.
It was glorious. Yeah. It really was. It was so nice. And it was like 4 p.m., and it was like a little chilly. And I was like, no, I'm going to stick it out.
What did it feel like to not even think about your husband and kids for a whole 36 hours?
I don't know what makes you think I didn't think about you.
There's
not a moment that goes by that I'm not thinking about you or Wes or Finn. I think that's just how my brain works.
Right.
Isn't that?
But that is a lovely, thoughtful gift. I cannot think of a nicer one than and randomly, like, you didn't tie it to any holiday, like a birthday or an anniversary, like. That's so major that it was just a random Tuesday or something. And wow.
Well, so we're talking about how not to hate your husband after kids.
And that's one way to do it.
That's one way to do it. Sponsored by Marriott, not a sponsor, clean your pools. I mean, I have to say, Jancy, that Ariel got your book while she was pregnant. And
The first time.
I saw it and I thought to myself, oh, no. What do you mean you're going to hate me after kids? What is this book? I don't like it.
Yeah, he was
I don't like the way it makes me feel.
He was concerned.
You hate me right now already?
Because at the time, we were where I think you were when you sort of describe at the beginning of the book where, you didn't know that any of this was going to happen. You had a great marriage. Blissfully unaware.
Sleeping in till 8 a.m. on the reg.
not having to trade off.
Cooking, for fun.
Reheating nuggets for fun. But Ariel, you did it when you were pregnant, so you hadn't even had Wes yet, and you were being proactive?
Yeah. Well, it had already sort of made the rounds of my friends that were already moms. And so they were like, you should get this. It's super fun just kind of to give you an idea of what it's going to be like. And I was like, well, okay.
Then after the babies come, I realized, it's as a prescient book. It is very important to learn how not to hate your husband after kids.
It's true. I mean, I read it the first time and I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, this, I can kind of, I can get behind this. And then when I read it the second time after we had had Wes, and I think Wes was, you know, like a year and a half at that point, and I was reading the first chapter and I was just like, this is me and this is me and this is me. It is so eerily accurate to my own life. And like, I just remember reading it and thinking to myself, like, how does she know who I am? How does she know?
I love that. Oh, I mean, and I wrote it for, I know the title is inflammatory, and we did, Ned, we did try other titles like How to Love Your Husband.
Yeah, they probably stunk. I get it.
Like, no,
yeah,
you need a grabber. But
it hooked me.
If we had the budget, I would have put a fake cover on it, you know, like, Introduction to String Theory or something. We just didn't have the money because like a fake flap that would go over it. Because again, it's of course a normal reaction to be like, wait, what's with that title? You know, and then you read it and you see, I mean, I wrote it not for people who are in abusive relationships. That's another sort of book. Mm-hmm. It's for, you know, a husband that you loved enough to have impregnate you. You have a good marriage, a solid marriage, but then it just falls into the toilet, you know, and you just... You're so baffled because you love each other and you think, like, how did it come to this?
Where's our avocado brunches that we used to do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like like when you have a kid and you know, all of the things that you appreciated about your marriage before, those things sort of go on the back burner and you kind of forget. Like, or maybe you never even realized what you had before, and now it takes work. Now you're, you know, kind of having a strong marriage and having a partner who's really there for you. It takes work, and it takes talking, and it takes like open communication. Which before I feel like we are the classic example where we just had a great relationship and things just sort of came naturally. We didn't have to say like, hey, can you empty the dishwasher? Or hey, can you, you know, like sweep the floors? Or hey, can you get off your phone and do XYZ? You know, but now you kind of have to like actually voice those things that you need.
Yes. And do you I was the same way, Tom and I, my husband, were the same way that you guys are. Like when people would say to us when it was just us, because how long were you two a couple before you had kids? Was it a while? It was a while, right?
Yeah,
like
a decent amount?
2018.
8 years?
It was almost 10 years, yeah.
See, yeah, we were 9 years, and that's a long time to really get in sync with each other. And I remember my parents would say, marriage is work. And I would think, not for me, suckers.
I've had a good
everything
one.
Yeah, like we got this, you know, and it really was easy and there wasn't all this negotiation. And then, of course, when you have the baby or multiple children, when is there time to even analyze your relationship? You're just rushing to get through the day. So there's that, too. And like it sort of sometimes can disintegrate and you don't even realize it because you're just running towards the finish line every day. Right. And so we never even analyzed what was going wrong. We weren't even in that head, you know, so. Yeah. That's another problem too. And then before you know it, it's at least with us, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so one thing that we really wanted to talk about was when it got really bad for you and you chose to go to couples therapy.
Yes, which I would highly recommend. And I know it's not, I know it can be expensive. And two things I just want to say. And one is that really scour your, if you have health insurance, you know, sometimes it's hidden in there, but sometimes therapy can be covered by your health insurance and they just don't make it very easy for you to find. And you can go to what we did a couple of times is go to therapists in training. If you call a psychotherapy institute, I know U.S. people have much worse problems with this insurance crap, I know. But if you go to a psychotherapy institute and you say, are there therapists in training? That's what we used. And they're wonderful therapists. They're just not that experienced. So you can get them either for free or for not much money.
Oh,
so
well.
I just wanted to say that because I know, you know, when I recommend therapy, I know it can be really crazily pricey. But anyway, so I knew, and this is how kid-centric I was. My marriage, again, was well in the toilet. And I didn't think about it. And what was the impetus for me is that we realized our child, our daughter, Sylvie, her personality was changing. And because we were so in the child frame of mind, I started realizing when I was, in our dynamic, I'm the hothead. And my husband is the one who sort of retreats, closes down, you know, the shell shuts. And the more he retreats, it's a pursuer-distancer dynamic. It's really common among straight couples. The more I would yell, thinking, you know, do you hear me now? And right. It would get me madder and madder. And he would just hope I would simmer down, but I did the opposite. And so we started fighting. And when it was really when our daughter was a baby, and we thought, she doesn't understand us. We can fight. But there is research that, of course, babies as young as 6 months, their brainwaves start going like this when they hear tone. So if you're harsh and argumentative, even if they don't speak yet or understand what you're saying, they're having a stress response. You don't want your six-month-old baby to have a stress response, you know?
Right.
We just didn't realize. We used to fight. My daughter was like 2 and she'd be watching Curious George, and we would fight over her head and like gesture at each other. And she was, children are sponges, and she was picking up on that, and we didn't realize it. It was just so, I wish I had the marbles to figure out that we were affecting her. We thought we were selectively fighting and like, oh, she's fine. We were sweet to her and fighting with each other. So anyway, her personality started to change when Tom started taking up chess on his phone, and he would play with people all over the world. And he started, right
great
when the
game,
baby came out,
game.
He plays chess on
people
his phone
have played
all
it for
the
thousands
time.
Of years.
You're kidding me. Are you social chess? Have you played with my husband?
No, but we could play. He's probably better than me if I've read your book correctly.
Well, Ned, he's had a lot of
he's
years
got a lot
of practice. He trained for the New York Marathon. He took up long distance cycling the minute the baby's umbilical cord was cut, right? Mm. So he started doing all these things to kind of escape us. So we started fighting a lot. And when I would yell, he's not a yeller. Again, he's a retreater. My daughter, when she started getting older, like around 3 or 4, would jump in front of Tom and say, "Stop yelling at daddy." What she saw was me attacking him, and she didn't like it. And then our formerly happy, chattery, you know, exuberant child started retreating a little bit. She started getting a little quiet when we would fight, a little watchful. And I thought, we're changing her personality. And I went to this guy, this famous doctor who's the head of the Yale Parenting Center. And he said, you know, I was talking to him about a different article because I write a lot of magazine articles. And he said, "Have you asked her how she feels about your fighting?" "No, I never did. I just never did." And I went in and I said, "How does it make you feel when daddy and I are fighting? Because we're not yelling at you. I'm right. just calling daddy a dickhead, you know?" And she said, "It gives me a stomach ache." And I thought,
it gave her a stomach ache. Oh my gosh.
A stomach ache, like, come on, right? I was just blindsided, and I thought, okay, we have to fix our marriage right now because our child is her personality is changing. We're ruining her. And it's so, when I think about it now, it's so sad that like, it wasn't like, oh, I'm losing a connection with my husband and we're not being kind to each other the way we used to be. Cause we were just like you guys, like civil and kind and appreciative of each other. And we really didn't fight. I mean, I know that's annoying, but we didn't fight all that much.
Yep.
I dated so many people. I was so happy to meet him. And so that's what was the key for us to get therapy, was that. And then later we thought, why didn't we just work on our relationship because of us? So yes, yeah. That was a really long answer. But then we went to a variety of therapists, including Terry Real.
Yes. And I mean, just reading that chapter of the book. So the chapter in the book, what's the title of it again?
It's Man from Boston.
The Man from Boston.
The context for listeners that maybe have not read the book is that Jancy, as you were saying, you were seeing some issues. Then you tried a bunch of different techniques to repair things and wrote about all of them. And this one was probably one of the most confrontational, because it was a scared straight type of therapist get off your ass and help out to your husband. Our harrowing encounter with the man from Boston.
Yes.
I thought that chapter was very funny because it's really it's a very direct way of working on your issues.
it is an unusual form of therapy. It's concise, and you know, he does. So, okay. I before it folded, I worked for Oh, the Oprah magazine. And when I started scouting around to all my kind of editor cronies, I said, who should I go to? And they said, oh, you have to go to the man from Boston. And I thought, who's this man from Boston that everyone talks about? And there's actually these two, in therapy circles, there's two men from Boston that people talk about. One is this stop smoking guru that everybody goes to. And the other is the guy that yells at you when you have marital problems. So his name is Terry Real. They said, you know, you better prepare yourself because he's harsh and that's his MO. And he's going to tell you things that you don't want to hear. And I thought, oh, you know, he's not going to, I thought, well, he's going to tell Tom things he doesn't want to hear, but I'm good. So we pack our bags. And this is how dysfunctional our relationship was. We never went out ever. Tom and I never went on dates, and we were like, oh, date nights, it's so silly. We never nurtured our relationship in any way. Like your beautiful plants in the background, ours would be like a dead, crusty plant.
Oh, no. These aren't real.
No. Yeah, I mean, these are fake plants. They are beautiful. Thank you. Yes, but this one's made out of plastic.
So we made an appointment, and he does these weekend intensives. He does regular therapy too. And he's not cheap. He's probably more now, but at the time when we went, he was $800 an hour.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
And so we do the math. I took it right out of my book advance. And this is how dysfunctional we were. We never went out, so we had no babysitter. And so we took our child to our marriage intensive. We put headphones on her and gave her a bag of candy and stuck her in another room for 6 hours. And she watched cartoons until her eyes bled. But something's wrong with that, right? Terry saw us bringing our child in and setting her up in another room. And he was like,
face palm.
Like, I'm so glad you're here. I have so many things to say.
I mean, yeah, he couldn't wait for us to go. So he's intense and he drills right down to it. He's very gifted. And he had me go in there and Tom go in there separately. And he gave us the most intense, forensic, invasive therapy session of our lives. And like, there's something about him. You just tell him the truth. I was telling him things I never told another human being in my life. And then he gets us both together. And we had an hour-long intense session where I remember I had dry mouth. My eyes dried out. He just gets right to it. And there was something weirdly exciting about it I find therapy very interesting and exciting because someone is coming to you completely a third party and doesn't know anything and is examining your relationship in a way that your friends, your mother, your this or that cannot, you know, because of course your friends are going to be like, oh, tell him to go to hell, you know, and he really got right down to it. And then he yells and he swears and he basically took everything in and we had to describe a couple of our fights. And he said to Tom, Are you kidding, man? It's the 21st century. Get off your ass. What the hell? Why are you not helping her out? Who do you think you are? You're so entitled. You sit there and you play social chess while she does all the work. Yeah, that's why she's worn out. That's why she's yelling at you. He went on and on and on. And Tom was like,
what?
And I thought, oh, I kind of like this. You know, I kind of like the man from Boston. And then when he was done, he said, now we're going to talk about you. And I was like, what?
What are you talking about? There's nothing wrong with me.
Because no. I really, after he must have yelled at him. I mean, it was a couple of hours. It was a long time. It was a little back and forth, but it was a lot of like, are you insane? And so I go to get my purse.
You're
like,
great.
Oh, it's lunchtime.
I think we're done here. Yeah.
See you later. Yeah. So I'll just write a check.
Confirmed all my priors. So thank you so much.
Could you imagine what that would feel like if somebody just berated you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would be a real shock to your system.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely.
Yeah. You felt protective.
Mm-hmm.
I felt protective of Tom because he was really, you know, and then in the middle of it, surreally, you go for a lunch break. And so Terry was like, all right, well, there's a Whole Foods down the street, you can go there. So Tom and I were like, we didn't talk the entire time. I remember we ate burritos at a Whole Foods cafeteria and then just like violently shuffled back and went for more. But then it was my turn. And he said, you know, you're really comfortable with your self-righteous indignation, because I told him that what happened was I would get angry that he wouldn't help out. And my mom friends, there's more of an instinct, at least with my mom friends. They just kind of help you out. They don't think about it. And I would have to ask Tom and he would ignore me. And so I would kind of like hate prepare dinner where I would bang things around and hope that he would notice and help me. And Terry said, he can't read your mind and you're being passive aggressive. And why are you not telling him what you want? And he said, I never forgot this. He said that it can feel safer to feel self-righteous indignation, you know, to be like, I'm doing everything as I'm cooking, as I'm emptying the dishwasher, as I'm doing it. It can feel safer because you're feeling righteous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, instead of saying, I feel like I'm drowning, I need help. I really, you know, I feel like I'm not connected to you. And so I had to learn to, as he put it, climb off the cross, because he really felt like I was a martyr hanging on the cross, which I was, you know, and he was saying, you're being a martyr. You are at fault too. You're not communicating your needs. And you're also, I was doing this thing that he said was called maternal gatekeeping, where I was setting a trap for Tom. I see this now. I could scream. I would say, you're not helping me out. And then when he tried to help me out, I'd be like, you're not dressing her right. You're not putting on her diaper right. You're not bathing her right. Let me do it. And maternal gatekeeping can either be criticizing your male partner, you know, it's literally opening the gate or shutting the gate. And I would open the gate and then I would verbally criticize him like, ooh, she's going to drown. You're not bathing her correctly. What? Look, she's going under. She's slipping. What? Give her to me. Give her to me was the number one thing I said. Or maternal gatekeeping, the criticism can even, and I love that I'm being filmed so I can show you, it can be noises. It can be like, you know, it can be just undermining him, which is what I was doing. So I would set a trap for him. He would try to help, and nobody knows what they're doing at first. I mean, you can, you know, some of us babysat, and you think, oh, I've got this. Nobody knows what they're doing, and so it can really put off a hesitant, insecure father, and that's what I was doing. And he said, you can't, no more maternal gatekeeping.
There's, like, multiple different ways to solve any given problem in... Right. You know, in parenting and caring for babies, it's like there's a way that you might do it, but the way that I might do it is also valid.
How many times have I done those things to you? Because, Jancy, as you were saying that, I'm like, oh, yeah, just the other morning I was being super passive aggressive because, you know, Ned did X, Y, Z. And all the time I'm like, Ned, she's going to... He needs a sweater, don't you think?
We probably need
like,
to work on that. I think you do that a fair amount,
to be
honest.
Oh, shoot.
I do feel like, you know, judged. And that
time to go back to therapy.
I can't do anything right. I mean, that was one reason why Boys Night was so fun. It's because we ate hamburgers in our underwear. And
did whatever you wanted.
Nobody could tell us that wasn't okay because, you know what? It was okay.
You threw the sweaters on the floor. You stamped on the sweaters.
That's right. You're like, we don't need sweaters.
But yeah, we listened to explicit Megan Thee Stallion music quite loud.
I probably would have come in and been like, we have neighbors.
At least an eye roll.
Like, you know, Wes is soaking up all of this information. You know, you do realize.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Ariel, you catch yourself doing that? Do you catch yourself doing that sometimes? Because I do it even, I have to really monitor myself and not say like, she needs a vegetable if he makes her dinner. Like, it's enough that he made her dinner. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All the time. All the time. And I actually, I have your book to thank for like keeping it in my head. You know, I think to myself, like there is no vegetable on that plate, but you know what? It's going to be fine. Like it go, like I still hear it in my head. And then I think to myself, not the time. Well, I'll give her a vegetable tomorrow. Or him. I don't know, girls.
I'll give him double the vegetables tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll give him double vegetables. It's fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that is a real important dynamic for people to be aware of like in the 21st century, non-birthing partners need to divvy up chores more, mm-hmm. you know, especially if you're both working. There's no excuse. You're both working. There's not enough hours in the day. You can't have one person be doing all of it. And then simultaneously, when the person that, you know, isn't usually doing this stuff starts doing it more, can't be gatekeeping or criticizing them.
Right.
It's kind of, it goes hand in hand.
One of the things that that you wrote that Terry actually said to you was that the relationship job description has changed, which I read that and I was like, it's so true. Like the job description of being in this relationship, the two of us, has changed.
Right.
And, you know, like we're both working, we're both caring for kids. We both need to pitch into the housework. Yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting.
Well, especially now with the pandemic, I mean, things are, because we have no outside stimulation at almost at all.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is really standing out in relief as to what each person is doing. I mean, it really, this is an opportunity. I mean, I've been saying this to other people, but like it is an opportunity to sort of fix in terms of chores and childcare, mm-hmm. any imbalances that you have, because there's no escape. You know, you're seeing exactly what's going on right now when you're home. And it's true, Ned, what you were saying, you know, for women outside of the household in the last three decades, things have changed radically. They're now half of the workforce, but inside the home, not so much. So I really do recommend it. It is the most boring, unsexy thing you could possibly do. But I do recommend to sit down and write down all the chores and kid-related things that you do in the house and divvy it up. And like the weird thing is, I don't know if you two have found this. I would love to know, actually. Do you ever fall into these like household jobs and you don't know why you do them? Like there's, again, especially because you have two, there's no time to think about it. But Tom used to do the grocery shopping and he actually hates it. And I would think like, wait, so when we sat down and divvied up our chores, I said, why did you end up doing the grocery shopping?
Huh.
Like you just end up doing stuff and you don't know why. I mean, some of it's gender roles and, mm-hmm. you know, societal things. I mean, is there something? So we went and divvied up, and I would love to know, just because I love knowing this stuff. We talked about the dishwasher earlier when we were chit-chatting, but like we went back and same-sex couples do a lot of this. They don't divvy up chores. There's been research about this. According to gender roles, like, you know, the man does the lawn cutting and the woman does the, you know, food prep. They do it according to preference. And so, you know, there, it's very freeing not to have that stuff, the shoulds of, you know, a woman should do this and a man should go do car maintenance or whatever. So we divvied it all up. And I actually love going to the grocery store because I love food. I love seeing the new food developments. I like seeing all the new snacks. And I like the Hall & Oates music at our local grocery store. I'm like, why was he doing it? He doesn't like fluorescent lights. It's one of his weird things that he doesn't like. So we switched and he doesn't mind doing the laundry. And that was another trick, is that that was his motive for doing, for him getting all laundry. I mean, this is another thing, is to make, I keep going all over the place, but what I learned from the many experts, I mean, I probably talked to hundreds of experts, is conflicts arise when things aren't clear. Make everything crystal clear, and then you won't have as many conflicts. You really won't. Like, Tom does all the laundry, 100%. And his motivation for getting laundry duty is that he hates when he runs out of underwear. He's dying right now if he's around listening to Tom.
Like, don't talk about my underwear.
Those are my skivvies.
Again, you know, and that, because that makes him crazy, and that's one of his points that he really gets nuts about, then he does that. I unload the dishwasher because I have this kooky thing where I can't stand dishes in the sink. It makes me, even one dish. Why? I don't know. I don't know why I'm like this. But if that's your thing, then you should own that thing and do it.
Maybe I should learn how to put away your clothes as well as my clothes.
Oh, yeah. So I like do the laundry, but okay. I'm terrible at taking the laundry out of the dryer. It'll sit in the dryer for days.
You're one of those.
Just getting all wrinkly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I will only take it out of the dryer when I have to put another load in the dryer, because I store my dirty laundry in the washer. and so when it gets full, then I turn it on, and then
efficient,
I have to do the
efficient use of space.
It really is. I mean, maybe I just hate laundry and you need to do all the laundry. But the thing that I hate more than doing the laundry is putting away my laundry. I will have clean folded laundry sitting in our bedroom for how long is it? It's
been over a week.
Gone weeks with just clean laundry sitting there.
If you reference my satisfaction at putting away a clean dishwasher, I'm the opposite. When clean folded laundry comes in, thank you so much, honey, for doing the laundry. Bam! Immediately in my closet. Sorted. It's done. When we come back from a vacation, I got to unpack. Oh, I do it the night we get in. Bam! Clean suitcase, clean room. Let's do this next day.
I have my suitcase open on the floor. I mean, it could sit there for days.
Days.
And I'm like pulling out dirty clothes and clean clothes and being like, dirty or clean? Definitely dirty. You know, I don't know why I'm like this. I do not know why. I just hate putting things away. I hate putting things away. I think
in the past we've given you like, this is my stuff couch.
Yes, I've always had a stuff couch.
If I have at least one place to sit, I'm happy. And then you can have some parts of the couch that is for stuff.
As long as
over a week or so, it does start to.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No. I can definitely tell when it starts to bother you.
Honey,
when are you going to put this away?
So, yeah, that could be. I could just put away your laundry as part of my chores.
That'd be great.
Bam, win-win.
I mean, I've already labeled everything. So, I mean, just start opening drawers, you know where things go.
No, I'm gonna need a full training session.
A refresher?
Yeah, I'm going to need to watch a couple of YouTube videos on your closet organization.
That's fair.
Did you all, after you had the kids, did you have to re-divvy up chores the way that we did? Or did you have a system that was basically working?
You know, I don't think that we have done that exercise. So I love that. I mean, anyone listening, I think that's a great thing to try if you're finding. We've sort of done it informally, but yeah, actually going through and writing out every single chore and every single baby responsibility.
Yeah. I actually really, I enjoy cleaning when I have the time to do it.
Okay.
And so I do a lot of the cleaning. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that there's the person who has a higher standard for cleaning.
Yeah, because I also enjoy cleaning, but relative to Ariel, her standards are higher than mine.
Yeah. I would call Ned's cleaning, you enjoy like getting out the vacuum every once in a while, and you enjoy tidying.
I enjoy tidying a bit more than cleaning.
I see dust on the baseboards, and I'm like, oh, it's going down.
Yeah.
Like,
and I get that way about dust bunnies, but probably not. A little lower standard for dust per se.
I mean, we could have done.
It is a good exercise. Again, I know it's not that exciting, but it's kind of amazing when you, number one, it's when you write down everything that you do as parents, it's kind of disheartening.
Yeah.
But if you can, and again, it doesn't need to be, I stress this a lot in my book, but things don't have to be 50-50 because it's unrealistic. And also if you're obsessing about, like, I had a couple therapists that, and I didn't, you know, kind of, they were saying it really should be 50-50 and you should absolutely be, you know, monitoring that. But I feel like that's yet another energy stream that I don't have to monitor whether things are 50-50, mm-hmm. number one. And number two, I do feel like if it feels equitable, then that's important. Like if it just feels fair to you, mm-hmm. You know, when I was being a martyr, I was saying, I do all the cooking. Now I love to cook and I love food, but I started getting self-righteous and I said, you know, why don't you do any cooking? And he said, okay. So he cooks one or two nights a week, usually one. And is that fair? Is that 50-50? It isn't, but it makes me feel good. It's mm-hmm. just one night off where I don't have to do anything is good enough for me. So it's whatever works in your relationship. And only you can say that, you know?
Yeah.
It just have to feel, you just have to be on your own side. Like this is another thing is like, I would try to, you know, speaking up and saying what I needed was actually helping me. Like that was another thing that a therapist said to me is just stay on your own side and do what's kind for yourself, you know? Can I get back to though your household chores? This fascinates me.
Sure.
What about the kids stuff? How do you divvy that up? Is it a day-to-day thing? Do you negotiate? Because we had to really negotiate everything. Mm. How did your roles fall? I mean, I'm just curious because I always like to know.
I mean, in terms of childcare, mm-hmm. it's daily. It's kind of a daily shuffle where it's like, okay, well, I have to do this. Can you watch them for this amount of time? And
the clearer we are with times of like, I have this meeting from 9 to 11 and then mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will watch the kids from 1 to 3 or whatever it is. Not like time in, time out, but knowing that you're like, okay, this is my time. I'm really going to focus on being with the kids because then I will be relieved at this certain moment. And if one of us is like late for whatever reason, you know, that can be an issue because you're kind of relying on the times that you've laid out, because what you're saying is it's important to be very clear and have clear roles. It's so true. Mm-hmm. Like when the things are more clear and more clearly communicated, I think we're both happier because you know, for better or worse, agree to the outline and then just do it.
Yeah. And I think it also, you know, we've definitely come to a point in our lives where we streamline our energy, you know, where if something is just sapping our energy or taking too much, then we either outsource it or we tell the other person and we say like, this is too much and I need help with this. You know, I feel like when it came to, kids laundry. I used to do the kids laundry separately from our laundry. And now everything goes in together. It's mm-hmm. just one big happy family, poop and everything, you know, whatever. Like, it's fine. It'll get clean. There's soap. It's cool, right? It's cool. And then when it all comes out, you know, eventually you just fold it all and it gets to the different rooms. And then it eventually gets put away, usually not by me. You know, it's and then in terms of food and things like that, it's kind of we'll sort of discuss it informally beforehand, kind of like, what do you want for dinner? Do you feel like making dinner? Because we both love to cook. And so it's
yeah,
it's
sometimes
sort of
you're fighting over who gets to cook.
Yeah, because you know, the other person is like kind of watching the kids while one person's cooking, the other person's watching the kids. And so you sort of have to figure it out that way. It's like, are you interested in playing soccer with Wes outside, or would you like to make spaghetti and meatballs? Like, what do you want to do tonight?
Mm-hmm.
You have, your negotiation skills are really on point. I commend you, because that is not easy. It isn't. And a lot of couples don't know how to negotiate. We had to learn, because again, going back to that, oh, everything happens organically. And I remember one therapist we saw, his name is Guy Winch. He's a New York City therapist. And I said, I don't want to have to negotiate. That seems so dry and cold. And he said, the minute you have a baby, every single aspect of your life is up for renegotiation. Nothing is the same. There's not a single thing that baby, a single realm of your life that baby doesn't touch. Your food, your weekends, your money, your everything. And so you have to renegotiate from the bottom up everything. And again, not so fun. And I wish there was a way to do it that was sort of festive, But we had to learn to negotiate. You two are much better off than we were when our daughter was Wes's age, because we just didn't know how to do it. We fell into the trap. I don't know if you guys ever do this, where we would, our form of negotiating was more like squabbling about who deserves the more fun job.
Because, we definitely like, do that too. Like,
you do? Because we, oh, yeah. Seriously, really?
Oh,
because
yeah.
I feel like you have a really, yeah. We would be like, who deserves to sleep in on the weekend more? Who worked harder this week? Who was with the kids more and is more drained? Who deserves to, you know, to play with? Although, you know, playing with kids, it can be fun, but it can also be just as fun to make spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah. Like, it's not necessarily that that's the better job sometimes, especially if you've been playing with the kids all day.
Exactly. You exactly. Know? And that's why, you know, you just kind of have to talk about it and negotiate, like, mm-hmm. What's more interesting to you right now, you know? But the other thing that we do that that you also talked about in your book is we appreciate each other, you know? So when, when the laundry does get done, or when, you know, like Ned's making spaghetti and meatballs, we say, like, thank you for doing that. Like, I see you. I see you doing all that work.
She gives me like a medal anytime I empty the dishwasher. So I kind of have true. This like rack of gold medals in my closet.
You're like, you know, a general with the medals right here.
Yeah. You know, because like I feel like I deserve a medal for just doing the bare minimum. No.
But it's but true.
It is true. And I would love a sticker chart, but that's a different conversation.
But he does the same for me.
Just like, saying thank you.
Ned actually will, he notices when I shower and he'll say, like, thank you for doing that.
Yeah,
like,
positive
thank you for taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, she's, I'm like, you smell nice. She's like, I showered. I'm like, exactly.
Exactly. You know, it's like we had it so rough when Wes was first born, and we just, it's like we were hit by a truck, you know, where just everything was harder and nothing came naturally.
And we learned that appreciation through couples therapy, actually.
Yeah.
Kind of learning how important that was.
Huge.
So it is very important for people.
Yeah. And so now, like, I think we actually use it, you know, to even more than we...
Oh, yeah,
maybe
yeah, yeah.
Should.
I mean, I was joking about the getting a medal for ordinary tasks, because that's how we operate.
That's just how we operate. It's like, it's,
wow,
it's
great
almost,
job getting out of bed in
right,
the morning.
Right, it's almost
huh?
to the point of passive aggressiveness.
No,
great
I don't
job
think so.
Breathing in and out. Like, hero. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
No, but it really does, there's research that you cannot thank your partner enough, and that
wow.
It was this Georgia State study that the couples that go the distance, they say thank you a lot, that you actually can't say thank you too much, even when it borders on like comedy that you're saying, you know, thank you for breathing in and out. Like it honestly is
you did it.
One of the factors that helps people go the distance. And that thing about being appreciative, I mean, that's so important. And I love that you do it, because you can get what's called confirmation bias. And that's when you dwell on certain things, then everything that you see reinforces that. Meaning that if I think that my husband does nothing and sits around, then every time he sits down, it's going to register with me. Oh, of course, he's a bum. He's not helping out. He's a bad husband. And you get tunnel vision, and it gets narrower and narrower, and then you don't see the good stuff. And John and Julie Gottman, they're one of the most famous couples therapists out there. And one of their mantras is look for the good. It's two things. One is look for the good, and the other is to say yes as often as you can. John Gottman said if he could reduce his everything into one metaphor, it would be to say yes as often as you can. And it's really true. And I think about that all the time. And the other is look for the good. if you don't look for the good, it's not confirmed. You don't see it. And we had this one therapist, I know this is in the book, but again, Guy Winch, he had us do this exercise where he had us write down 10 things that we loved that our partner did for us. Not characteristics, because that's easy. That's like very like a birthday card. You know, you're funny, you're nice, right. you're adorable. Instead, it was specific actions that the person did for each other that we appreciate. And I remember I was writing this down. Ariel, I know you read this, but like, and one of them, I remember I was he said, okay, write down the 10 things and bring it to your session next week. And we said, okay. So we secretly wrote down 10 things that we loved, actions that our partner did for each other, me and Tom, and we brought it. And we thought we were going to read it to Dr. Winch. And he was like, no, you're going to read it to each other. And we said, oh, all right. So I got weirdly shy and emotional. So I had my little piece of paper, you know, I was like, okay. So I started going through the list, and it was like, you know, you make the baby laugh when you pretend that your, you know, shoe is a phone and you answer it. And no. Then I went down and I was like, and you painted my parents' house. And then I was like, he painted my parents' house. Every weekend, he would drive to Sparta, New Jersey, get on a ladder where there was a hornet's nest, and paint my parents, not his parents,
my parents.
The exterior of their house. And that, of course, because that was when she was like one or something, that just blew by me. Like, how could I not have been appreciative? And I started crying in our session because I was like, the dude, I mean, that is love. You know, it's not always about like giving compliments. It really is sometimes looking for actions, which is another thing. My husband in love languages, he's all about acts of service. So he's not about pretty words. He doesn't do flowery words. It's just not his way. I wish it was. He saves it up sometimes. He'll do it for like Mother's Day or whatever, or my birthday, but that's not his way. But once I started paying attention to his actions, like usually when I do podcasts like this, he sets everything up for me and he makes sure my lighting is good. That's why I look so weirdly pale and Dracula-like today, is because he wasn't able to do my lighting. And and I can see my neck is a different color. Like, this would never have happened if Tom was in charge. And that's love. That's love. And it's, I wasn't looking for it, so I didn't see it. And you do have to, that's a long-winded way of saying what you're saying, that of like appreciating each other is an action that you have to decide to take, isn't it? It's not, it doesn't come naturally when your life is so crazy, when you're both working, when you have two children, you know. It can be
so
difficult.
I love that you're talking about negotiation. And one of the things in your book was that you had some tips from an actual FBI hostage negotiator. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Which, is this the same hostage negotiator? When I was rereading it a couple of days ago, did you watch the Waco Netflix documentary? Is it the same guy?
No. What?
Same guy.
Same guy. I knew it.
Gary Nestor. And now we're friends. And when he comes to New York, we have dinner together. He's really great.
Oh my Classic God. Nestor.
Yes. So that's what he did. He was a hostage negotiator for 30 years in the FBI. He would put down prison riots. He would rescue people that were kidnapped. Like, he is the absolute paragon of calm in a crisis. And so I remember, I can tell you quickly, I was at the gym. I saw this bank heist in like Texas, and people came in and made the guy surrender. He was waving a gun around in like 2 minutes. And I thought, I should call up a crisis negotiator and see if they have any tips. And Gary told me there's this 8-part behavioral staircase that they do with an agitated individual in the FBI. And I was that agitated individual. And he said the number one thing, number one tip that he loves is paraphrasing. When we get upset, and it's often because we feel like we're not being heard, and it's so simple, and it's psychology 101, but the person has to paraphrase, just repeat in their own words what you're saying. And that way you know that you've been heard, because Tom could do this thing where he wasn't actually listening to me, because he could repeat like a computer what I was saying, but he wasn't actually, you could tell he was just repeating it.
Yeah.
And so when he put it in his own words, it was great because I felt like I was being heard. Sometimes we would laugh because he would get it wrong, and then it would break the tension because we would just laugh. Another is verbal affirmation. So when someone's talking or ranting or raving, like I would do, ranting, not raving, he would say, you simply say, uh-huh, yes, go on, yes, mm-hmm, yep, yep, yep. And that calms people down because it feels like you're listening, you're tracking them. And it's hard to be mad at someone who's going, yep, yep.
I hear you.
Yep.
Go on.
And I know, yeah, I hear you. And I know I'm doing, yep. And it Check still out. Works. And like even another one is mirroring, where they just repeat the last few words that you said. Like you can go through another rant and then you say, and I'm pissed. And they say,
you're pissed.
And you're pissed.
And you're pissed. Okay.
And when that happens, you're like, yes, yes, I am pissed. You don't need
anything within you. You get it. So I will put the gun down.
Yeah.
You're right. It's not worth robbing the bank.
Yeah. And and keep your tone, you know, modulate your tone, and all those things just really do serve to calm you down. It's kind of amazing. And you know, leading with I statements, he would say, one of his examples was, he would say to someone who was, you know, completely screaming, like, I can't hear you when you scream at me. If you can just lower your tone, then we can maybe get to a solution. And it's not, you is inflammatory. You're a jerk. You're being too loud. You're screaming. Lead it with I. And that really does help. And just getting off the subject for a minute is also saying, I feel. This is something psychologists say, is if you talk about your feelings, no one can argue with you. If you say, I feel disappointed that the laundry's still sitting on the couch 7 days later, they can't argue with how you feel. That's how you feel. And so that's actually one of I interviewed two crisis negotiators. Another one was also with the FBI. And he said, if you talk about how you feel, that also diffuses the tension, because instead of saying like, you're a jerk, then the person would say, no, I'm not. Or they start arguing with why what you're saying is wrong. They can't argue with how you feel.
Yeah.
How you feel.
As long as you don't say, I feel that you're a jerk.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry that I've made you feel
I'm
that way.
I'm sorry that you're such an asshole. Wow, that's great. Can we practice? Can we practice? Do you have something that you're mad at me about?
This is exactly the same way that we talk to our toddler.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Because, yeah, that's true. We learned that in a toddler book.
There's a toddler book that I can't remember what it's called. It's called like Name Your Feelings or something. Is that what Wes has? Or like
different one.
We read The Happiest Toddler on the Block, where it's the same thing, where you mirror what they're saying and like you just repeat what they said to you. You know, so so if he comes and he's like, I want M&M's now.
No, you want M&M's now.
You want M&M's now.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't have to give it to them.
It's really frustrating that you want M&M's now.
You're feeling frustrated. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
So we talk to each other like toddlers too sometimes.
There was another thing that I wanted to talk about. We're kind of getting down to time, but I mean, there was a part in the book where it talks about like sex after kids and just
let's
do
talk
it.
About sex.
Let's talk about sex.
We have 10 minutes left. Let's talk about sex. I mean, one of the things in your book is you have the Nike effect of just do it. Could you tell a little bit more about that? What does that mean, just do it?
So, of course, it was months after I had the baby, I was so nervous about what was going on there internally. And I was just very afraid of things falling out of like things bursting. It was just, you know, it's such a graphic, weird feeling, right? And like, I was afraid of being in pain. And but then I healed up and I still didn't want to. I was still just in this strange place where I just, well, it's also the effect when you have kids of having hands on you all day long. So you're sort of touched out.
You're touched out. You know? You're just feeling. Yeah. And Rachel and I talked about this a fair amount where you just feel like you need to keep something to yourself.
But we knew things were getting bad and we were in this drought. And so there was this really long-term and huge study of sex therapists. And they studied couples over a long period of time, newlywed couples, couples that had been married for decades. And as it turns out, I mean, I think it was like 80,000 sex professionals. And that sounds like, you know, I mean, therapists. Mm.
Yeah.
And
all right.
The sweet spot is really once a week. You would think it would be more. It's really not. That for maximum happiness, the sweet spot is once a week. And then I started delving more and interviewing all these sex therapists. And even for just intercourse, that the maximum, I'm trying to remember, I think it was like 7 minutes for intercourse was the maximum amount of,
We got to read this study. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I think it was 13 minutes. And I thought, okay, 13 minutes, if you have kind of a hurried, if you sort of get into it quickly, which it seems like you do everything that way when you're a parent. Like I thought, okay, 13 minutes once a week, if it's just intercourse and you're not getting too creative, once a week, 13 minutes, that's not so much. And so I put that in my brain and I thought, once a week. And like I used to, again, like I used to disdain people that said that marriage was work. I was like, scheduling sex, like, come on. But if you can, it doesn't have to be Tuesday night at 10:15.
Leave a calendar appointment with my assistant, please. Thank you very much. If you could schedule that dick appointment with our assistant here, that'd be great.
Once a week is doable. That's 4 times a month.
We do have a strict 24-hour cancellation policy.
So aim for once a week. And really, you should, just do it. And maybe it's not going to be, I had several sex therapists say it might not be so great at first. And you might be springing leaks and you might be, out of practice, but just do it anyway. It does start those happy chemicals going of togetherness, oxytocin. That gets going when you have sex, and that's a bonding hormone. And that, it can also happen when you, not to get off the subject, but non-sexual touching is also important. And when you're touched out, sometimes you don't want to hold hands with your partner or hug your partner, but can you feel those chemicals? Chemicals are starting to kick in. Hugs.
Actually, you were talking about the like love languages. One of Ned's is physical touch.
Yeah. I need hugs. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's important. And like that can go by the wayside. And so I made myself, even with non-sexual touching, which can help with the sexual touching, I made myself squeeze his arm more, hug him, give him a kiss, which also falls by the wayside, And so we tried for once a week. And even he was kind of, in our dynamic, he was more eager to have sex because, he didn't have C-section stitches and stuff. And so he was ready to go. And the therapist said, well, if he's more motivated, can he collaborate with you again, like talking about it? What is your issue aside from feeling like it's going to hurt? And I said, it's because I've been so obsessed with sleep. It's okay. If we get rolling now, I'm losing half an hour of sleep and I'm going to be up. It's the baby gets me up early. It was a sleep thing.
Yeah.
And the therapist said, what if Tom could find a way to carve in an extra half an hour where you didn't lose any sleep? And I said, yeah. He started putting the baby to bed earlier when she didn't tell time yet. And even when she was a toddler, he was like, okay, I got this. I'm going to put her to bed half an hour earlier. And, I'm always the sucker who would read like the 17th story to my daughter. Mm-hmm. He's not like that. He's like, lights out. And he would put her to bed and he was like, okay, I got us half an hour. She usually goes to bed at 8:30 and she's going to bed at 8. Let's do this.
We got 23 minutes. Let's do it.
23 minutes. I only need 13.
And so that sort of thing helped. And like another was a therapist told us, because I was the reluctant one. I was for all the things we just talked about. And so the therapist said, what if you do a no strings attached thing where, you always say my back always hurt from carrying her around in that carrier, the baby. Mm-hmm. And she said, what if he gave you a nice massage, not the husband's shoulder scrunch 2 second thing that he would do. I'm not anti-husband. I'm just saying my own husband. He would be like, there you go. Oh. There's your massage. He would give me a good 20 minute massage with massage oil. And if something happened after that, great. And if it didn't, it was the risk that he took. Another was, and usually it worked because I would be relaxed. I'd be so happy. It was non-sexual touching. There was no strings attached. He really, I might walk away. And another was, could you just make out for 10 minutes? Nothing is a guarantee. No strings attached. And if you can go further than that, great. And if not, he's taking a risk, but it's better than nothing. He may, you know, and that would relax me. I wasn't under pressure. Mm. And inevitably that would work too. So we did work together on a couple of those little tricks. Because sometimes you have to deploy tricks. You just do. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted to have my mom party after I put the kid to bed. Chips, you know, Netflix, totally. You know, stretched out maternity wear well after I'd had the baby.
Still comfortable.
And he, you know, in his mind it was, baby's in bed, now we have an opportunity. You know, so we just had to work with that. And again, I wish it happened naturally. It just didn't for us. And I would highly recommend strategizing, because research shows couples who talk about sex, even when their sex life is terrible, are more likely to be having it because it's out in the open. Sweeping it under the rug doesn't work. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It just makes things worse. Yeah.
I feel like our sex life is generally pretty good, but there's definitely been nights where we've sort of not been feeling it and agreed to just do it. And then afterwards, you're like, "Oh, isn't that nice. Cuddling so much? That was so nice."
Yeah, totally.
So afterwards, you were like, "We should do this more often," right? Like, it was that thing where you're like, "Okay, that worked out." Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's never, you don't regret it ever, really.
Yeah, yeah, you never regret it. And I think I mean, to just sort of sum things up, I think it all just kind of comes down to communication. You know, like, you have to communicate about sex. You have to communicate about your chores. You have to communicate about like your needs. And yes. I mean, therapy was great.
Yeah.
For us, I think therapy was great for you guys.
Hopefully that everyone's listening in today has gotten a couple of tips that they can try out on their own, even regardless of therapy or not. And definitely everyone go check out How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids, Jancy. Thank you so much.
Truly this has one been of my favorite books.
A this lovely is
it, it's just hour. It's a laugh like the whole way through, but I feel like I am also I feel like it also changed my life.
Oh my
so
God.
So you feel like thank it you changed so your life.
Thank you for being so open about your therapy. You're really helping people. I had to say that.
Like, oh, thank
it's just
you.
Wonderful.
I mean, back at you. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ariel, I appreciate you. That was a great job hosting this podcast today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate you too.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you did a really good like wrap up.
Yeah,
there.
Be sure to like and subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. 5 stars. 5 stars on iTunes. And email your questions at babystepsadvice@gmail.com.